Can something as simple as being grateful have a positive impact on your health and wellness? The answers may surprise you, and not because we have a self-help book to sell you or a 10-point plan that will reshape your life. Clinical research points to wide-ranging positive health effects, from greater psychological well-being and lowering risks of depression, which you might expect, to surprising physical benefits like better sleep quality, improved cardiovascular health outcomes, and even modest but meaningful improvements to longevity. One 2024 study found that gratitude seemed to protect participants, nearly 50,000 women, from every cause of death researchers looked at, even after taking into account things like physical health, economic circumstances, and other aspects of mental health and well-being. All of this is compelling, but while gratitude is one of the most widely studied activities that contributes to well-being, what these findings actually mean is still up for debate. What researchers do know is that gratitude is remarkable for one simple reason. Anyone can practice it. Today you'll hear from someone who makes gratitude a life-shaping force, even in the face of tremendous adversity. His story is a powerful reminder that gratitude isn't reserved for easy times. It's often forged in life's most difficult moments. Welcome to Living Healthy Together. As you guys know, this is a healthcare podcast. We talk about healthcare all day, every day. We also talk with a lot of really, really interesting people who work in healthcare. And that's what we're going to be doing today. We're here with Francisco Herrera, a member of the EVS team at University of Vermont Medical Center. Francisco has been in the United States for many years, but he grew up in the Dominican Republic. He spent his childhood there, became a firefighter, became a fire investigator. And so what we want to do today is sit down with Francisco, talk a little bit with him, learn about why he chose to come to America, why he chose to work in healthcare. A quick note for our listeners. Telling your story in your own words is really important. We're using a voiceover to translate Francisco's responses from Spanish, which is his first language, to English. Welcome, Francisco. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. As I said, you grew up in the Dominican Republic. You grew up in the countryside. Let's start the story there. What was it like growing up?
Villa Altagracia.
I was born in Villa Altagracia, in a place called El Maizar of Villa Altagracia. I remember, not that I remember, my mother told me that she had her first two children, me and my older brother. My father and her separated when I was a month old, and my brother was 11 months old. So she stayed in the countryside for a while. And then after 3 to 4 years, we moved to the capital. We moved to the city, in this case, the city of Santo Domingo, which is the main city of the Republic. And at that time, we moved. Then it happened that in 1965, a problem with a civil war. The United States had to intervene to solve the situation. So based on this problem, she sent me back to the countryside with her sister. There, our life wasn't easy. We really had to work hard to fight to be able to eat sometimes, to do things, and achieve our objectives. We had to work hard. Sometimes we would work jobs for grown men, difficult jobs, and on occasions we couldn't reject it because, in that case, our father, like our stepdad, he would give us a lot of advice and would tell us how to do things, and we would have to work hard at it. And sometimes we would go out to work in the morning and we wouldn't bring anything to eat. So then over there at the farm where we were working, the main thing we did at the countryside, and we would get plantains from the tree and we would boil it sometimes in a can, and then we would put it and we would eat it. But it was really hard. But also, I don't want to say that it was bad, because it taught us to be people of work, to be hard workers.
Hacer persona de trabajo, de trabajar fuerte, de trabajar.
These are challenges that most folks will never experience. I grew up on a farm, but I never went hungry.
I never feared for my life. I never had to go into the forest to find food in hopes of having something to eat. How did these things help form you into the person you are today?
No quiero que nadie pase lo que nosotros
pasamos. I didn't want anyone to go through what we went through at that time. And sometimes there wasn't food. We couldn't cook. But yes, there was. We would find out on the street, we had planted mangoes, avocados, bananas. We could eat anything, pear, we could eat, but it wasn't like the typical meal that you would expect. Sometimes they would cook the rice at 6 p.m. because we would arrive late from work, and it's a large experience and made me. So whenever I see a person that doesn't have something to eat, try to help them in one way or another to be able to have that person eat and make things easier.
Sí, okay. O hacer la cosa fácil.
Moving from one situation to another is hard for kids, right?
Yeah.
It must have been really hard for you to go from growing up in the country to moving to the city. But then you have that added layer where you're not just in a new place, but you actually fear for your life. Your life is at risk. Can you talk about what was that experience like? What were you thinking about? What was going through your mind as a kid when you got put in that situation?
I remember after my mother
was obligated to bring me to the city because we were going through family problems with me at the countryside. So she brought me to the city. But in the city, I wasn't going to find the beauty. I wasn't going to find a restaurant to eat. When I came from the countryside to the city, the only thing that was different is that in the city, there was electricity and not on the countryside. But here in the countryside, we had to work hard and work hard with my brother to be able to help my mother to be able to bring food to the table. My brother and I and my mother, we were used to getting up early. My mother had other four children. She began having only two, but then she had four more. So at that time, I remember that we would go to the market to buy products. And then these same products, we would sell them in a different place where people would walk by to be able to earn some money. But we wouldn't only do that. What my brother and I did, because my other four brothers were small and they couldn't do anything, we would have to wake up early. And I would have to take two of them to the school, and my brother would have to take the other two to the school while my mother was working. So that's how we would do to be able to eat. But my brother and I, who were the oldest, we would sell on the streets. We would sell bread, corn, avocados, boiled eggs, all these things we would sell. And also in times on November 2nd, it's a very popular day over there. It's the Day of the Dead. And on that day, we would go to the cemetery to clean the tombs to earn some money. We had to do many things. And I remember in 1975, 74, I was selling newspapers. And I remember that I was going to bring the newspaper to a client, and then an Impala car hit me. And I was out for about a month or two because of this accident. I was close to losing my life. But things didn't stop there. We had to continue trying to get money to be able to help our mother so she wouldn't have to do everything by herself.
I've met you a couple times.
So,
I've never seen you not smiling, not the happiest person in the room. How do you go through this kind of stuff and come out the other side? You, how does that happen?
You know what happened? When I came here my third year, I need to say thank you, many people here.
Not be bitter, because we know that life has to be lived. And we try to live it well and live it happily, because we don't know when we're going to lose it. So I always try to be like this. And sometimes with my own wife, we're always just joking around and, just making jokes.
What made you want to become a firefighter? This is something I didn't know about you now.
Let me go back with the previous question. In 1975, after the accident that I had, I joined a school for priests in 1975. We would play baseball, football, soccer, everything, and also study. there for me, life started to change. In 1975, life changed because I went in to study there, and peace changed there. There in the Dominican Republic, sometimes with problems, the police would come in and break in and without a reason, and also gangs trying to find young women to take have relationship with them because and they have guns. And then in 1975, that changed my life. When I went into this college, I was there from 1975 to 81, 82 when I was done, and things were difficult. So then in that year, in the 85, in those years that I was in that school, I learned many things and I met many friends. It was like here, I had a lot of people that everyone knew me. I used to play baseball. Yeah, but I wasn't good. I was good catching, but I wouldn't bat. So that's the thing. So how did I become a firefighter? When I was done with the school and this school for priests. So then in 81, 82 was my last year because I was going to move on to high school. So I wanted to stay in that place. And I told the principal, who was a priest, that I wanted to become a priest. But I was planning on staying there because things were good there. And he said, no, my son, you have to go because you have to help your mother, your brother, to raise your other brothers. So at that time, out of coincidence, my mother was working with an official of the firefighters, and they had me join. But I really didn't make it there out of vocation. I wasn't there because I liked it at that time. But after I spent 6 months with the firefighters, I thought that was my house. We loved being firefighter. Oh, I still love it because if you say, come grab this hose, I'll do it. You can be sure of that. So the question that you asked, it was it related to the firefighters?
The question you made is relation with the fire department, right? En esa forma fue que yo llegué a los bomberos.
In that way, it's how I made it to the firefighters. Because my mother, having finished a job at the school, I had to find work to help my mother. But it's not like the firefighters were such a big deal because when I joined in January 1st, 1982, around the sixth day, it was around that time, I started earning 120 Dominican pesos, which were about $27. Sometimes we wouldn't have enough of the fare for breakfast. Sometimes you would get paid and you would still owe money and you couldn't give anything to your mother because the money was too little. But inside our heart, we already had what's called the calling. The calling, why? Because we would work there for nothing. So we would be out there and telling your coworker and telling him, did you see me there holding a hose? Did you see me last night? And that would happen. There was like a competition among colleagues because in the firefighters, I don't know if here it's like in my country. In my country, firefighters keep climbing. The first 2 years, in my second year, I was made a corporal. And then on the third year, I was a sergeant. So the raise in ranking would increase my money, but it wasn't much either. What happened is that there were a lot of us who wanted the ranks, and we had the calling to be able to reach the top to be a general because the chief of firefighters over there in Santo Domingo is a general, and everybody fought for that, to be at the top. We had a competition amongst ourselves, but we also worked hard for this. Because the competition, that longing to reach, allowed us to compete among each other. He said, no, I'm going to go first. No. So everyone had their job and everyone enjoyed reading. I had to read a lot and write. I was in the firefighters. We had a magazine. And the one that wrote the page for the sports was me.
El que escribía la página de deporte era yo.
It's time for a quick break here on Living Healthy Together. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more from Francisco right after this. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together. We're talking with Francisco Herrera of UVM Medical Center about his life and times and how gratitude has shaped his life. Let's get back to the conversation.
It seems like your mom and your family are the most important things in your life, or a huge presence yeah. in your life. What did your mom and your family think of you becoming a fire?
I began saying at the beginning that when my mother would hear that there was a fire, she would call immediately. She would begin calling the firefighters because she would be concerned because I was a willful firefighter. So my mother was always concerned about me. Sometimes there was a fire and we would drive by where we lived. And where she lived was always an area where there were a lot of fires. And sometimes you would see the videos on television and she would see me working hard there. And she was always concerned. And sometimes she would call my friend that she knew and she would call him to ask him, or she would call the station to ask. So yeah, that would happen many times. And since I said before, well, I'm going to say later that on several occasions, I was close to losing my life working as a firefighter.
Being a firefighter is not an easy job and it's not safe.
Yeah.
Why did you want to become a firefighter?
I told you earlier that the reason as to why I became a firefighter is because my mother needed help and she worked with a fire official. So she took me to him and I joined the firefighters. And after I joined the firefighters, I fell in love with being a firefighter. I fell in love. For me, being a firefighter was the biggest thing in life. Sometimes I wouldn't even go home. I would stay sleeping at the station. In Santo Domingo, they say fiebre, that longing, that of wanting that there was a fire to be able to go and put it out.
There's always things that surprise people, right? Whatever the job is, it's never quite what you expect. When you get into the job and you start doing it, there are always surprises, probably. What surprised you when you became a firefighter? How was it different than what you thought it was going to be?
It surprised me was the condition for the fire department, because sometimes they don't have equipment. I go to the fire, sometimes we go inside, and this time without oxygen.
Oxygen. We didn't have oxygen. We had to go in bare lung.
A pulmón limpio.
You'd walk into burning buildings without oxygen.
Without oxygen, in esa época.
At that time, and sometimes we would go and there was no equipment at that time at the station. And then we started getting some, but at that time there weren't any.
And you saved people like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A veces también.
And sometimes I had difficult situations where I would go into the fire and the first thing that I would step on was a person's head.
Cabeza de gente.
What made you want to take it a step further and become a fire investigator? Did that just happen naturally or
no?
What brought me to investigation, as I said earlier, to be able to reach certain positions, you had to really work hard and have objectives. We had to have these objectives to be able to achieve it. And what were these objectives? To get that promotion. You had to read. As a firefighter, you had to read to be able to move forward. And that's what I did. I read a lot. And in the fires, I was always the nozzle man. And that's the guy that's at the front. And I was always at the front. And also the dedication with the people who would go to the station, how they were treated. So then in 1984, I was made corporal. I was promoted. And that's how I kept going, moving forward from corporal to sergeant. I wasn't sergeant major, but from there I moved to an official, to second lieutenant. And as I read and learned, I was moving forward. Then I was made first lieutenant, then captain.
What made you decide to come to AMET?
It's a long history.
Towards the end of 96, in November, I left the firefighters because of the problem that I explained to you. So then in the year 2000, I saw an officer who saw me on a scooter, and I never had a car working as a firefighter. I never had a car. And he saw me and he said, look, they're revising your case. And I'm like, really, they're revising my case? Oh, that's nice. They're trying to bring you back because they noticed that what they did at that time was unjust to you. So then about 5 months later, now in 2001, the boss called me and he told me to go there to have a meeting with him. And he said, look, we want you to come back, but we don't have the rank that you had for now. They didn't have my rank. I was a captain at that time. So I started as a first lieutenant, and 6 months later, he made me captain again. And that's how it was. And that's how it was, many things, many stories. But what gave me the thing to leave was another problem over there with politics. Because the police chief that brought me in didn't last long. He was removed. So one thing came in that was called favoritism. I was major in 2007, 2006. I was promoted to major. And I have a picture at home. I can send it to you if you want it. In 2006, I remember that in 2007, there was a small problem. My boss, in the morning, they were saying that I was going to be pensioned. They were, Francisco, you're going to get pensioned. No, they didn't call me Francisco. They said, Montilla, you're going to get pensioned. You're going to get pensioned. So my boss, as he liked to work with me, he got mad. He said, I'm not going to suffer again. And he went to the boss and he said that he was going to retire. He retired, that he was going to retire. So what my boss did was, I told him, when I found out that my boss was going to retire, I said, I'm retiring too. And as he saw that I was going to retire, he felt bad. Because I was going to retire, because I was hearing that someone else from the street was gonna come in to take the position that I had so I could do all the work, because he didn't know how to do any of that. And I told my boss, I want to retire too, because I can't, like, why aren't you making me the director of the department? Because I can do all of it. He said no. And about an hour later, I was told that I was pensioned and they removed me. And I left. But I didn't leave how I wanted, because they were supposed to give me, with my retirement, give me an 80%. And out of spite, the boss gave me only a 70%. And for almost 2 years, that's the money I was making underneath of what I was supposed to make. They shouldn't have pensioned me at that low level, but that should have been above, because I had been a major for 4 years. My rank was lieutenant colonel, and they didn't give it to me. They decreased my rank, and I wouldn't go to the fire station until after, when I started becoming friends with him, and they gave me the 80%. But it was almost 2 years with none of that.
It's time for a quick break here on Living Healthy Together. We'll be right back with more from Francisco right after this. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together. We're talking with Francisco Herrera of UVM Medical Center about his life and times and how gratitude has shaped his life. Let's get back to the conversation.
Most people don't even travel to a different country to visit. You picked up your whole life, came across an ocean, essentially. Was that as scary as fighting fires without oxygen?
No.
Being a firefighter was nothing to me, because I didn't know of the danger. We would read about the smoke. But it was a need to go into the fire without the tank. Because if you didn't go in there without the tank, you would have a problem. I remember one time I was removed from the fire and they had to give me oxygen outside.
What surprised you and what disappointed you when you got to America?
I know how to answer for this, for the last one.
Okay, what surprised you?
Surprised me the person.
How I was received by the people, because I came here and on the second week, I could tell you that I would wave to over 200 people in the first 3-4 weeks.
You've been working in healthcare for a long time now.
70 years in April 9.
every person I've ever talked to and asked about you says you're the happiest, most fun, and most grateful person, or one of them, that they know.
Yeah.
Why is that who you are?
I like to see the person happy around me. The same my wife, my daughter too.
If you have the opportunity to change the world, what would you change first? And a lot of people say, I would change the president and things. I say, no, the thing is that we have to change the people. Be happy. Because life is only one. And I'm not going to say that sometimes I'm feeling uncomfortable. And yes, there are situations where you feel uncomfortable or feel bad. But mainly, I try to be joyful, happy, and try to do something. And more if you talk to me about the Yankees.
Last question I have for you.
No, you don't.
You can ask all you want. There's some questions that you haven't asked, and that they're here.
There's a lot of people out there right now that are having a tough time. There's a lot of unhappiness, a lot of fear. What would you say to people who are feeling that way?
I had the opportunity to study over there. I would write for sports. I told you that there was a magazine in the fire station, and the one that wrote the page for the sports was me. And I also studied in college for journalism, and I didn't finish because I had a few problems. It was one problem, and one that wasn't a problem is that my two daughters were born. I had my two daughters, and I had to help. So then that's one thing that I try. I try the best that I can when I start working to be happy. When I'm driving my car, when I'm starting in the morning, I'm playing loud music in my car. And sometimes people can't hear outside, but I'm hearing it and I'm happy. But one thing that I learned in the class that I took over there from work, I was a professor, I was a trainer at work for students, and people would come, children would come from schools, or we would go to schools, and also we would go to colleges to give fire prevention classes. We would go to businesses to give fire prevention classes. And I would also talk about one problem, one thing. What's the one thing that I told them? When you go start working, try to leave your problems hung up on the door. If it's a problem at home, leave it there at the door. And then you come in with a different view. And I know it's hard because it's happened with me. And I know it's hard, but we try to do that. And you will always be happy. And always trying to say, to wave or say hi. Because mainly, it has a benefit that many things don't have. It's free. Saying hi or waving at someone, say, hi, how are you? It's free. You don't have to pay or be charged for it. This is free. So why not take advantage? Let's take advantage of the free stuff.
What haven't I asked? What do you want to say that you think it's important for people to hear?
You know what? I don't have many things to say.
I don't have to say many things about the people here, because I have one of the things that has helped me a lot here is that I found people just like me. There's a lot of people who are happy just like me. We are happy. I have a friend here that sometimes we talk like we're millionaires and we don't have a dollar. You hear that? So that's how things are. We have to try to be happy. Sometimes we know we have problems at home with the kids and things like that, but let's try to be happy at least. Because in the morning, if I see a person who's sad, if I see a person that's in a corner by themselves, I don't know what they're thinking. I get close and I talk to them about something they like. I talk about baseball. Sometimes there's people here who are sad and I talk about to them about Boston and the Yankees, and we talk about something. There's a gentleman here, a coworker, and I told him, I said, you're young. I'm working here. I've been working here because I'm old, but I can't do what you can. You're young and English. You can study nursing. And the kid graduated from nursing school. I was in LNA. Why did I continue? I didn't continue because my English wasn't good, but I worked as an LNA for about 5 years.
So firefighting is not all that you're up to.
In 83, I was studying broadcasting because I had a radio program. I had a radio program with a classmate, and at the end, she betrayed me because the program, we had a program, a sports program, and arts. And she had half an hour to speak about art, and I had half an hour to speak about sports. And what she did, she took the whole program for herself. When I brought in a guest, she wouldn't allow them to participate, and she wanted me off the air. So the program was called Proyecto en Dos Mundos, that I came up with this name. I named it, but she kept the project. I worked as a journalist assistant over there. They would leave, and they would leave me at the newspaper covering what was going to happen. I would do the chronicles for the game, and I would publish them as a special, not as the journalist, because I was a student. And just like that, I had experience about that. I remember that one time I went to a journalism class, a sports commentator class, and the person, they did this twice, but then I learned why. I remember that the first time that I spoke and at a thing as a sports commentator, the professor said that I wasn't good for that. You're not good for that. And then after, at the newspaper, I wrote an article and I brought it to the gentleman, to the director, and he put it in the trash right in front of me. But then I found out, as I was reading a book, I found out that was to encourage me to put me in action. So this would motivate me, but I didn't take the motivation. I continued working, but I wasn't motivated in journalism and broadcasting. I didn't have this great projection because I had problems with my daughter, but I would arrive from the newspaper sometimes at 2 a.m. when they would take me, and then I would have to get up the following morning at 5:30 to bring the kids to school. It wasn't easy. One thing happened, and this thing, let's keep it between us. I remember that one time, I was already working. I wasn't a firefighter. I wasn't Metardón. I used to do is, at 10 o'clock when I was done, I would follow the game during work. And then I would run to a newspaper when I was done at 10 o'clock. And then at 2, 2:30, they brought me home. My wife left me with the smallest child, with the oldest child at home, so I could take care of her. And I remember I was laying in bed with her, and I would try to block her so she wouldn't fall. I would try to block her with my feet, and you know what happened? The girl hopped over me and fell from the bed as I was sleeping. And from that point on, I said no more. I didn't go more. I didn't continue going to the newspaper. They called me about 4 times for me to go back, but I didn't. But my life was compact. There was a lot of things that I had to do to be able to move forward. But I always thank God and the people who helped me. I've always found people who help. And there's a person here that I dedicate a lot to her.
Thank you so much for being here.
No.
Thank you for sharing your story.
You need to ask me the la pregunta número 13.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
What keeps you grateful? Why is gratitude such an important thing?
Okay. Listen. Me mantiene agradecido.
I remain grateful. I am thankful first to God because he has allowed me to live and to have my family and my friends and other things. I'm really thankful as well to have had the opportunity to serve the firefighters at Santo Domingo from the Dominican Republic to Metardón. This was a company that I worked for when I was out of work. I worked there for 3 years in Metardón. And lastly, to the University UVM Medical Center Hospital that gave me the opportunity to, and they allowed me to grow as a human being and to grow within the community. I am also thankful to all the people who I have met and that have been a part of my life, people who have been part of my life, people that I've joked around with. We live kind of playing, because being honest, there's a lot of us that we spend time here and we don't allow that bitterness takes the best of us.
Humbly,
gratitude is very important to me because it has taught me to recognize and value what I have and what I've received. I focus in what truly is important for others. I try to connect with people every day. Gratitude also helps me to keep a positive perspective. That's why I try to get new friends or make new friends every day. And every person that I see, I say hi to. I feel happy every morning that I return to work. And I say hi to the people and they say hi back. Blessings to all. And that's everything.
That's a great place to leave it on Living Healthy Together. Thanks, Francisco, for sharing your story and the many, many lessons on gratitude. And thank you for joining us today. If you're interested in more about gratitude and some of the research into the health impacts it may have, check out the episode description. We'll have some links to blogs, clinical studies, and other resources for you to explore. I'm your host, Philip Rao. We'll see you next time. That's a great place to leave it on Living Healthy Together. Thanks, Francisco, for sharing your story and the many, many lessons on gratitude. And thank you for joining us today. If you're interested in more about gratitude and some of the research into the health impacts it may have, check out the episode description. We'll have some links to blogs, clinical studies, and other resources for you to explore. I'm your host, Philip Rao. We'll see you next time.